Happy Friday Eve, beautiful folks. I'm Christine Williamson in for Molly Karam here on First Take. And my friend Jay Will is here with
Hello.
Me. Good morning.
You ready for today?
I'm pretty excited about today. We got a lot of talk about, some basketball, a little NFL action. You're here with us all day. Monty McNutt over there in Miami holding it down. It's nice and sunny in Miami. You have the yellow on, looking good, Steph.
What up, cuz?
Hey, Jay. I want to take this moment, though, Jay, because Christine never tells me when she's doing First Take. And so now that we're doing it together, like, this is the first time I found out. So our friendship, I don't know what's going on with our friendship right now.
I figured this would be a nice surprise. Good morning. You know, you're in Miami. Okay? You're living it up in
it's
Miami.
It's dark I'm a and cloudy here, by
exactly.
the way.
It's raining
very beautiful
outside
behind
over
you.
Here. Okay? Okay? We'll talk about Miami very shortly.
But is it?
We'll talk about Miami very shortly, but we have to talk about last night because the Warriors took game one of the Western Conference Finals, 112-87. Luka Dončić had 20 points, but was 6-for-18 and 3-of-10 from deep. He had 7 turnovers, a huge testament to that Warriors defense and Andrew Wiggins. The Splash Brothers were hot in the second half. Steph Curry finished with 21 points, and all 15 of Klay's points were scored after halftime. I mentioned that Warriors defense. Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, how did you feel about it?
We did an excellent job defensively, but we're under no illusion that we've figured anything out. We just played really hard and competed and tried to contest shots.
They were doing a great job on me, especially in the second half. But I think I got to be better. That's not me. And as a leader, you know, I gotta be better for the whole group. So that's on me.
See the cut on Luka's face? That is Andrew Wiggins' finger that did that to him. I'm going to start with you, Jay Will, on this one. It was a little bit of a blowout last night in game one. Do you think the Mavs are going to be able to make this a series?
Yes. A couple things to address here, though. But one, it looked like Luka came out of a heavyweight fight.
Right.
I mean, damn. The game was so physical last night. That's exactly how you need to play if you're Golden State. But there's been a lot of conversations around Luka being a top five player in the league. And let me say this. If Luka is top five offensively, then Monica, he has to be bottom five defensively. I just got to state that off the top right now because watching him, there were so many times, and you notice, Monica, as a player, former player watching the game, when you see a guy get stripped and turns the ball over and then the camera panels down to the other end and you don't see that person literally come into the frame when he's the one that turned the ball over. As a former hooper, you're saying, yo, come on, man, you got to give me something. Now, I know that what he brings to the table offensively massively outweighs how deficient he is on the defensive end. But damn, that's number one. Number two, look, this team took 48 threes. They only made 11. In the first half, a lot of those threes were wide open threes. So as much as we're going to sit up here and praise Golden State for their defensive efforts, Monica, and I get it, Andrew Wiggins, he played his tail off defensively, stayed attached, was detail-oriented, stayed according to the scouting report. But at the end of the day, Luka typically makes shots that are challenging, difficult shots. So for me, if they're knocking down threes at a high clip, we're not talking about how great Golden State is defensively, we're talking about how they're shooting lights out. So look, game one is a feel-out game. We all know this. I think Golden State is a good team. They're probably favorite in the series. But by no means do I count Dallas out of this series off one game. None.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%, Jay. And again, you cannot praise Andrew Wiggins enough for the way that he was able to defend Luka. But when you look at it in totality, he's able to stay that close to him because he knows he has tremendous support because, to your point, nobody could buy a three-point shot if you were wearing a Dallas Mavericks jersey. And so, to me, not only will Luka stop and survey and acknowledge the way that he's been played, his role players absolutely have to help him out. Because then you force the Warriors defense to play it honest in terms of collapsing on him. There were a number of times we've gone over different clips in the tape, and you can see Dwight Powell setting a screen, or Jalen Brunson in the peripheral, or Dorian Finney-Smith. But because those guys could not get water from a water faucet, there was no reason to go out and contend them. Now, on the flip side, in terms of Dallas making this a series, Steph and Clay, and the amount of action in the Warriors' offense continues to be problematic, right? And Dorian Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock are guys that you respect as defenders. But they just had to work so hard to stay attached to those guys because of the offense. And so I expect Jason Kidd to look at this thing in totality and make some adjustments. I know that Luka and the Mavs are one of the slower-paced teams in the league, and Luka likes to take his time and make it work. But they've got to figure out a way to get some easy baskets. I think back to the glimpses of Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson in the Jazz series at points during the Sun series. They have the talent to get out and get in transition a little bit and contend maybe with some of the Warriors' stifling defense. But I still think this is going to be a series, absolutely.
Monica, can I tell you, you know, we always end up talking about, you know, who is Dallas going to get? What is Mark Cuban going to do to bring another superstar into play with Luka Doncic? But I got to tell you, if I'm Reggie Bullock, if I'm Dodo, Dorian Finney-Smith, there are a lot of times throughout the course of a game, Jalen Brunson, I'm looking at this dude out of the side of my eye and be like, yo, man, you are a liability. Like, you are killing us on the defensive end. And we're trying to execute. I understand, but it goes both ways, right? Because what he brings to the table, Monica, is incredible offensively. He's a genius. He's a savant. I love it. But there are times if you're executing, if you're out there, you're denying passing lanes, you know this back screen is coming, you actually play, and then you see him stand up, and he gets you beat because of that continuity, that exposes him more because you can't hide him in the defense. Whereas vice versa, to a degree, with Steph Curry, when he's on Dorian Finney-Smith, they didn't involve him in a lot of action. Steph was just sitting in the corner, saving his legs offensively. So that's my thing. If you're taking away Luka's legs defensively by making him move with constant movement, that takes away from some of the energy and the pop he brings to the offensive end. I'm just trying, you know, it may not be fair, but we all know my life ain't fair. I'm still looking at him a little bit sideways. If you can't give me some kind of effort defensively.
I'll give you, I might look at him sideways for 0.5 seconds, and I'm going to be like, no, because that man keeps us afloat.
I ain't going to say nothing. I'm just thinking it. I'm thinking it.
I might think it, and then I'm going to say to myself, you know what? This is what it is to be a teammate. I'm going to be better on the defensive end for him because I know he carries me on the offensive end. But, Jay, I mean, you're right, Jay, but I think when we start talking about, and you've been talking about your top five today, talent and the ability to score covers a multitude of shortcomings. As much as you and I might get excited about defense, we don't have debates about top five defenders. And you can argue whether or not Dorian Finney-Smith, not so much Draymond, because Draymond has been highly touted and appreciated as a defender, Reggie Bullock, you can argue whether or not those guys have gotten their due. And I think part of the reason that the conversation is around Andrew Wiggins' defense last night is because we don't discuss him as a defender often, right? And so the reality of the league is the guys that make buckets, we're going to figure out everything else. And I will go back to some reporting that Cassidy Hubbard did in the Phoenix series where Jason Kidd talked to Luka about the 2 seconds. Like, we just need you to hold for a short enough amount of time that we can support you defensively as a team.
2 seconds. Just give me 2 seconds.
Just give me, get in that stance. Give it to me.
I'm going to keep it PG. All I'm saying.
What?
Monica,
oh, wait a minute. Wait,
happening?
No. What? What is happening?
All no. I'm going to say,
wait a minute.
Monica,
that's not, no. Let's bring it back. Come on, Christine. Get it back on track.
I'm bringing it back. All I'm saying, though, is what we are talking about defense to a degree in this series, though, right? Because like, what we've done, the conversation has shifted. We're talking a lot about Jimmy Butler, right? People are saying, hey, he's a top five player in the league. I'm not saying he's my top five player in the league, but conversations are starting to trend in that direction. And what do you value about Jimmy Butler is that offensively, he's kind of went to a different level that we've seen in years past, right? His stats in the postseason are comparable to Michael Jordan in a single postseason, which is absurd. But what he brings to the table defensively, Jason Tatum, we're now calling him a top two-way player. So I know what you're saying about we don't factor defense in as much as offense, but it is starting to trend as – what kind of player are you on both sides of the court?
Okay, let's say in the West. We were talking about defense, obviously, and defense was huge for the Warriors. They didn't do anything crazy offensively. Monty, like you mentioned, their three-pointers. Steph missed his first 5 threes. Klay didn't have any points until the second half. Mm-hmm. So who is the most important player on the Warriors team right now? Would it be Andrew Wiggins and his defense?
In yesterday's game, sure, he set the tone. But when it comes to this team, it continues to be Steph Curry, and there's no doubt about it. Listen, a missed five shots is nothing for the dude that's going to pull up and hit however many from deep. Like, shoot or shoot to stay hot and shoot or shoot to get hot. And I think beyond the misses, like, you can call them just warm-ups, the way that Steph and Clay, Steph in particular, both move opens up everything else. Quiet as is kept, prior to last night's performance, the pool party had turned into a little bit of a kiddie pool. Right? And this offensive side of the Warriors' performance, we had some questions. They was throwing the ball all over the place versus Memphis. Draymond pointed out they got beat by 55 points. And while you weren't necessarily alarmed, everybody involved, including folks in Warriors uniforms, would acknowledge that that wasn't necessarily championship basketball. But you get into this series, Steph is moving all over the place, Klay is moving all over the place, Jordan Poole is back in action, and their offense is flowing, the ball isn't sticking. That is signature to what the Warriors do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would agree that it's Stephen Curry. Do you know, like, it's really interesting, and maybe it's more so, Monica, out of my show on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Every day I have to deal with Max, so there's a little bit of a pet peeve about what happens when I mention the name Stephen Curry, because the conversation always shifts to, well, he doesn't have a finals MVP. I'm like, this man is basically averaging 30 points per game in the Western Conference Finals. 30 points per game. In the NBA Finals, he's averaging 26.5. Last night, Stephen Curry gave me 12 rebounds. 12 rebounds as a smaller guard. So his ability to constantly move, along with buying time for Klay to come alive in the third quarter, when they hit offensively, and that's going to be the challenge for Dallas, right? If Steph and Luka cancel each other out, if Klay comes to the party, along with what Jordan Poole did against Max Kleba, oh my, last night, you talk about Luka being a liability. They targeted Kleba as well, right? All the time, and Jordan Poole had him on skates. This team just has such a high offensive power clip that if they all hit in all cylinders, it's going to be a problem for Dallas the whole series.
All right, Monty, let's take our talents to South Beach. We're living vicariously through you. We get more Eastern Conference action tonight as the Heat take on the Celtics for Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Miami took Game 1 of the series, 118-107. And the biggest question, who will be on the court for both teams? Miami's Kyle Lowry is still out for the fourth game in a row with a hamstring injury. And for Boston, Al Horford is listed as doubtful. And Marcus Smart is probable for Game 2. So Jimmy Butler was a force in Game 1, scoring the second most points by a Heat player in the conference finals, only behind LeBron James in 2012. So Butler's playoff run has been historic, as his 3 40-point games are the most in a single postseason in Heat history. So Smart, probable, definitely not at full strength. Knowing all of that, which team has the edge in Game 2, Jay Will?
I'm going to go with the home team, the Miami Heat. Their favorite by Vegas is odds. But also say this, you know, Marcus Smart is a pivotal piece to this team. The thing that concerned me, Monica, and I would have probably given the edge to the Celtics, is when I heard the report by Woj, when he said, all right, he's now out of the walking boot. He moved around a little bit in practice, but it was still gingerly. And I know having Marcus Smart on the floor is a dynamic change, right? Jason Tatum no longer has to initiate the offense. Those 4 turnovers he had in the third quarter, it looked like he was dog tired, right? Coming off the series, Game 7, literally days before, Miami had gotten more rest. I understand all that, but also he's the equalizer to Jimmy Butler. And I wonder, like, even having him back at 70, 80%, it's still a better percentage, because you can't target Peyton Pritchard anymore. Right? Him playing 30 minutes, we all know what time that was. As soon as they saw Peyton Pritchard walk on the court, any hooper was like, oh, come here, Peyton. And it's no disrespect to Peyton. It's just what it is when you're going in the Eastern Conference Finals against guys like Jimmy Butler and guys who have a coach in Eric Spoelstra that will target the weakness of a link, right, to a degree. Now you can't do that with Marcus Smart, but still, I still give the slight favorite to Miami, just because I don't know what version of Marcus Smart is going to come back and participate in Game 2 tonight.
Jay, I'm inclined to agree with you. It's not a wide margin if Marcus Smart does not play. Right? And so I think one of the things that we've appreciated about this Celtics squad is their ability to bounce back after losses. They are 9-1 after their 10 losses in terms of the game after the loss, right? But you dig a little deeper into that, Jason Tatum in those games has not been without Marcus Smart or Al Horford. And so I think their ability to bounce is heavily contingent on who is available. Now, to your point, Marcus Smart, his attitude, his energy, his intensity, he absolutely sets the tone for this Boston Celtics squad. And if he's on the floor, I give the Celtics an opportunity to get this game here in Miami tonight, because I trust them not to turn the ball over again a gazillion times, which literally breathed life into the what the Miami Heat wanted to do. And I think Ime Udoka will make some of the necessary adjustments, a big one being Smart on the floor versus Pritchard. And then furthermore, when you look into who has most success defending Jimmy in terms of effective field goal percentage, it's actually Jaylen Brown, and then it's Marcus Smart. But again, if Jimmy, to me, in the half court, is a different challenge than Jimmy getting out off of live ball turnovers, off of a defensive rebound, full head of steam. And so I'm gonna go Smart is available at a decent percentage, or he wouldn't be playing. And I think the Celtics respond, but I might be wrong, and I could very well be wrong on that.
Monica, don't you think this needs to happen, though? And I've seen it over their undefeated postseason at home for Miami. After every game and spending time down in South Florida, going down there for our whole radio kind of affiliate tour that we did, everybody always talks about, and it's a huge headline that deserves a lot of praise. I mean, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus are two undrafted players that have been balling out for the Miami Heat. Like, I just want to say that again. Two undrafted players balling out, and everybody's been singing their praises. If you're the Boston Celtics, you're trying to flip that narrative around. You're trying to have the narrative tomorrow being like, yes, they have two undrafted players that start for their franchise in the Eastern Conference Finals, and this is what happens when you start two undrafted players. We take advantage of it, we leverage it, and we beat it up so you can't start them anymore, because we have not asked ourselves one time throughout this playoff series, where's Kyle Lowry? When is he coming back? We haven't felt the need to have a sense of urgency about bringing Kyle Lowry back, because Gabe Vincent and Max Strus are doing their thing. They need to flip that narrative.
So it's very true.
It's funny, though, Jay, because I watched Kyle Lowry a lot through the course of the first game. And he's talking to Gabe, and he's engaged, and he's energetic. And I actually think as this series wanes on, you might miss, I think you will, miss Kyle's pesky nature defensively and his knack for hitting some big shots as this series continues to get tighter. But I don't know. I think the Gabe Vincent and Max Strus thing, while they are undrafted, it's not like they are second-year players. Like, they've been a part of this Miami system. Yeah. I believe Gabe is 25. I think Max is around the same age. And so more than anything, this is the tip of the cap to what Miami does in terms of their system and their development, in the same vein that we talk about what the Warriors do with their system and their development. And so I hear you, but I also don't know it's like they just pull some bums off the street. Because done is made viable and contributing NBA players out of those guys.
I'm just saying, if you're Marcus Smart, if you're Jaylen Brown, if you're Jason Tatum, you'd be like, come on, man. It's time. Now, you don't look at it that way, Monica.
I mean, sure. Whatever you got to do to get
it that way. Yeah, you have to look at it that
way. That's true.
Yeah, I got you.
Monty, we've heard Jay Will all morning talk about his thoughts on Jimmy Butler. I'm going to ask you this question, and then we'll ask Jay Will. Who is the best remaining player in the postseason?
This is where Jay and I disagree, because I do believe it's Jimmy Butler right
now. I didn't say anything yet. I'm just over here.
But I talked to you this morning already on KJM, so I already know where we're going with this. You look at the list and the company that he is in, he went into game one averaging a career high 28.7. I imagine it probably has ticked up after that 40-plus point performance. In this conversation, for me, I am not willing to separate the two-way nature of Jimmy's game from some of the other great players that remain in this playoffs. To me, the conversation at this point is between Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum because of just that. There's no way that this thing doesn't come down to important defensive stops down the stretch, whether we talk about in the each conference finals or in the finals ultimately. So I just cannot separate that. And so to me, it's Jimmy Butler. He has been reliable on both sides. He continues to get better. He's in fantastic shape for this moment, and he's a tremendous leader for this Miami Heat organization.
Monica, let me address a couple of things. Number one, I see this is what First Take does. They try to trick you with the wording, right? look at right underneath the top. Best player left in the postseason. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, well, there's a difference for me as a hooper between who is playing the best and who is the best. So there is no doubt in my mind that Jimmy Butler is playing the best. The numbers are comparable to Michael Jordan. the 41 points. I mean, the stat line is ridiculous. But also, let's be real about this as Hoopers. And I'm not saying it's not difficult what they've been able to do. You win against the Atlanta Hawks and the 76ers, right? No Joel Embiid, orbital fracture right here. James Harden shelved himself. So I get it. Big time game, though, against the Boston Celtics without Marcus Smart, without Al Horford. Not taking anything away from the numbers from Jimmy Butler. Still playing the best out of anybody right now. But the best player left in the playoffs is Stephen Curry. Again, I don't know why we always – and it takes me into the whole top five argument that people are trying to say, well, Jimmy Butler's top five right now. I'm like, what are we – the guy last year, even though they got bounced early in the playoffs, averaged 14.5 points in the playoff series, right? So I get that when it matters the most, you want Jimmy Butler on your team. But to me, my top five players are guys that do it the whole year and in the playoffs to a degree, right, when they are full throttle. So this is a conversation for me, Stephen Curry. His resume speaks for itself. The amount of championships, the unanimous MVP, I have to factor in the entire body of work. And last night, maybe, has he had a signature game moment where he's dropped 50 yet? No, because he has more weapons on his team that are helping him get there. But I'm not going to sit up here on national TV and tell you that Stephen Curry isn't the best player left in the postseason, because he is, in my opinion. Jimmy Butler is playing the best, but Stephen Curry is the best player.
Okay, so if we're going to go nuanced, because I love this, and I think you make a great argument. Obviously, Steph is a part of that conversation. But if we're going to go nuanced, Jay, are we then separating these players from the system in which they play as well?
Well, I mean, you can keep them part of the system. I can make a case that Jimmy Butler is a byproduct of the Spo system down in Miami and Pat Riley. I mean, you can make that case on how they defend. I know that the culture is built around Jimmy Butler. The culture is also built around Stephen Curry, is it not?
Okay. Yeah, I'm asking you, though, because now, let's just humor me. Let's separate whoever our guys are from their systems, right?
Okay, yep.
I need a bucket. I don't want to go too not actual basketball, but I need a bucket one-on-one. Like, you still taking Steph? I'm taking Jimmy. Like, I just, in terms of the player at the moment, if it's just me on an island, I'm taking Jimmy right now.
Okay, I'll take Steph. That's fine. I mean, if you're doing it in nuances, I mean, the 101, that's all these different silos of conversation. But if you're saying 101,
I see
what you're saying about Jimmy Butler getting a tough bucket because of his size and his frame and how you can get that off. But if you give Stephen Curry some space, I mean, people try to sleep on Steph not having a top three handle in the NBA. Top three handle.
He does have tremendous handle. I'll give you that.
So he has handle and he has a shot from the outside. And people try to minimize or marginalize his importance on the floor. Like, even when he doesn't have a game where he drops 30, his sheer presence on the floor opens up lanes for other people to attack, because you can't hedge off him.
100%.
You can't help off him. So
100%.
That's a major thing. Like, it's – but I hear what you're trying – I hear where we're going with that conversation.
If we're just going to go down the first take rabbit hole in the nuance of our one-on-one basketball game on an island, like, yes. I continue to go back to the two-way nature of Jimmy's game. And that's really the only argument that I would have for you versus Steph, because you're right. Steph's handle continues to be underrated. Obviously, that whole system is built around him, and he's the most important piece as they continue to go for a championship run. By the way, y'all, once upon a time, I was like, the championship window was closed. Yeah, I was bugging.
What happened was, you good.
I'm going to run that back. That's why I don't put my opinions out there. Monica, I love you so much. Have so much fun in Miami.
Love you, too.
All right, Monica.
Thank you, guys. See you later. We got some football to talk about. We go to Philly. The Eagles took a big step in filling out their secondary, agreeing to a one-year contract with cornerback James Bradbury. The team announced on Wednesday the deal will pay him $7.5 million, with the total possible value being $10 million, a source told ESPN's Adam Schefter. He is expected to make an immediate impact, starting opposite Darius Slay. So Bradbury is one of the many notable pieces that the Eagles have added this offseason, as they have addressed the rest of the defense through free agency and the draft. They also added a much-needed weapon in A.J. Brown, as the Eagles ranked in the bottom five in receiving yards last season. All right, so we got some other friends here to talk a little NFL. Kimberly Martin and Rob Ninkovich here. Let's start here. The Eagles are the team to be in the – no, sorry, this is the question. Are the Eagles the team to be in the NFC? I almost answered the question for you. Kimberly, let's start with you.
No. If you had said that was – if you're going to say the Eagles are the favorite, no. And you know why? We talk so much about quarterbacks in the NFL. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have anything. You might as well sit out. Despite all the additions, the one question mark that everyone still has is the Eagles quarterback. I love Jalen Hurts. I love coming out of the draft, the way people talk about him, how guys rally around him. It's infectious. I think he's going to be a really good starter. We still have to see him this season go out there. And the best quarterback in the NFC East is still Dak Prescott. And that is the only thing that separates, in my mind, the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. Because the Dallas Cowboys, that gap between them and the rest of the NFC East, as people like to joke, that gap is shrunk. But again, the quarterback. A lot of confidence in Jalen, but he still has to go out and prove the naysayers wrong. He has to prove the Eagles right. And he's a guy who's up for the challenge, but he still has to do it.
Kimberly, you are wrong. You are wrong on this one. Listen, I think the Eagles on draft night, come on now, Kimberly, hear me out, okay? Here we go. Okay. Listen, draft night, when A.J. Brown went to the Eagles, that is when the Eagles jumped over the Cowboys, because right now, if you are the Cowboys, look, everybody loves diamonds, okay? You know how diamonds are made? Pressure. A lot of pressure on them Cowboys. So the Cowboys, every single year, you hear Jerry Jones, well, now, hey, we've got a team we put together here. We're going to put ourselves in the Super Bowl. And they don't make it because they're under the pressure. The Eagles right now, they just come flying under the radar. They already won their Super Bowl a few years ago, okay? So listen, you got Devontae Smith. You got A.J., you got the quarterback in Jalen Hurts, and I think Jalen Hurts right now is on this, like, upswing, and he's going to continue to grow and develop and be a better quarterback, and you're building the team around him. So you add more weapons. He's got the offensive line. He's got the defense. They got the cornerbacks. They got the pass rush. So for me, they got the draft pick in the pass rush. So for me, I think the Eagles right now are the team to beat, and there's only two teams in this division. The rest, you know, I'm not believing in the Giants right now. I'm not believing in the football team. So I think it's between the Eagles and the Cowboys, and the Eagles just jumped the Cowboys.
Rob, first off, there's no need to slight my Giants. We didn't do anything to you. We're trying to figure out life, okay, moving forward. A lot of questions around Daniel Jones.
Sorry. But
I would have to probably agree with Kimberly on this one, just because I love Jalen Hurts. And I get it. Look, they were able to steal James Bradbury from the Giants as far as a corner. Like, I get what their defense is doing. I get all the moves that the Eagles have made. And I agree with you. A.J. Brown has a chance to be blockbuster with them, right? But I've heard so many people, and one of the things I've always had questions about with Jalen is that there are a lot of questions even around last year about his decision-making and his accuracy. So if those are two big questions around him moving forward and we're projecting – to a degree, I know that Dak Prescott has been in the MVP conversation before he got injured a couple of years ago. And I know last year wasn't his best year, but we are still projecting. I know there's holes that they have for the Dallas Cowboys, and losing Amari Cooper definitely hurts. But still having the pieces that the Cowboys have, what they did in the division last year, I respect the Eagles that they're up and coming, but I still think the Eagles need to take it away from the Cowboys, rather than we come out of the gate saying that, oh, it's the Eagles and now the Cowboys are chasing the Eagles. I still think there's respect that deserves to be put on the shoulders of the Dallas Cowboys for what they've been able to achieve with Dak Prescott thus far.
Nick, it's real simple. Which quarterback in this moment would you choose? You would choose Dak. That is the only thing that is making me say the Dallas Cowboys are the team to beat because they won 12 games last year, they won the division last year, and they have the quarterback. All that said, my guy, I am with you on how the Eagles have the best O-line and D-line. They came out of this draft with – you are so excited about this Eagles team. And if you're choosing with your heart, I get it. The Eagles, they're the team that's on the upswing. I get it. But we still have to see it. And if there are questions about downfield accuracy, if there are questions about decision-making, if there are questions about whether the Eagles – will commit to Jalen beyond this year, then you can't say right now that the Eagles are the team to beat. In week five, we might be able to say that. But right now, no.
All right. I guess I'm just following my heart on this one. And I'm going with the Eagles.
Which is fine. We know emotions. You're an emotional guy.
Emotional guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Rob, I am curious. Where would you have Dak ranked as it relates to the top quarterbacks in the NFL? As opposed to where you have Jalen Hurts.
He's up there. No, so yes, Dak is above Jalen Hurts, no doubt about it. And okay. I think Dak is a tremendous quarterback. But again, your team has to really rally around your quarterback. Your quarterback has to play great down the stretch. And I feel like in the early parts of the season, Dak really played well. He played lights out. I mean, you look at week one, that Cowboys-Tampa game, it was insane. And then things kind of fell apart a little bit, and you saw the chemistry of that team really was starting to kind of pull on each end, and they were struggling a little bit, and they didn't make it to where we expected them to go. So now, you know, you look at the offseason, you got certain guys that were like, you know, I got more money over here, or I got the same money, I'm just going to leave the Cowboys because I want to go to another team. And you saw some guys moving around and maybe some unhappy players on that team, which eventually could mess up that chemistry. And there's two parts of a team that are very important. It's chemistry and communication. If you don't have chemistry, you can't really go that far. So I think that this team right now with Dak, they're going to have to search for that identity, that chemistry. And if they can do that, yeah, they could be a great football team. But there's a lot of pressure on this team to make it not only to a playoff, but to get to a Super Bowl. And every single year, Jerry Jones says, you know, I'm chomping at the bit. I don't have many bites left. I need to get back to a Super Bowl, and that can affect the team. And I like the way the Eagles have approached this offseason. They went out and they approached the needs to help Jalen Hurts. You go and you get A.J. Brown. You go and get a really good pass rusher, because we all know there's two parts to an NFL team that are really important: your pass rush and your quarterback play. And if you have more weapons like A.J. Brown, and you go have a young, awesome receiver core, and then you go get the cornerbacks. So they got two cornerbacks, they got a pass rush, they got the receiver, and now we're just going to have to see if Jalen Hurts can do it. If he can do it, I think this team is great.
We have to see. That's the operative. I'm glad you ended on that. We have to see. Good job, Rob.
All I'm saying,
He's following his heart.
If the question was, who do you trust more down the stretch, I would have a different answer. You know what I mean? Exactly. I would have a different answer.
They do it who like do you this trust now. More down How the do stretch? They do it now? I don't know.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right, everyone knows the competition in the SEC is fierce, and now it's getting feisty. Texas A&M claimed this year's top recruiting class, and it has thrown a spotlight on the unintended effects of name, image, and likeness rights. Nick Saban's Tide finished second to the Aggies, and now he's calling out Jimbo Fisher and the school for their recruiting practices.
We were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. Yep. So it's tough.
Ooh, all the drama. So we're calling on the mouth of the South for this one, and the one and only Paul Finebaum joining us. Paul, what are your thoughts on Saban calling out Jimbo Fisher?
Floor is yours, Paul. Have fun with this one.
It'll be great.
I was shocked, and I'm shocked, Christine and Jay, Will, because Nick Saban doesn't do things like this. He doesn't get into firefights with other coaches. He's the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time. He doesn't have to. He usually says, I'm not accusing the other guy of cheating, even though we know he is. But in this case, I think it's been a slow burn. He lost to Jimbo Fisher not only on the field, first time he'd ever lost to an assistant, then he lost to him in recruiting, and he didn't just lose. Jimbo Fisher had the best recruiting class of all time. That was after an 8-4 record. So I think Saban finally had enough. He's been talking to people for months, friends, media people off the air. And then last night at an event promoting a world event to Birmingham involving young people from all over the world. This was not a football event. He just went crazy. He went off crazy. That might be a good way of describing it as well. And I'm just not under. I'm not really understanding why. I understand the animus toward Jimbo Fisher, but he also went after Deion Sanders, which has really rattled a lot of cages, including Deion Sanders and including the player who is a number one player in the country that he mentioned. So it is the college football world on a late May day is upside down.
Paul, let me workshop this thought commentary I have with you in real time here. And just correct me if I'm wrong. Was there a player that was a quarterback that was flown across all the flyover states to get to Alabama with his entire family to participate at Alabama football? Mm. Okay. Thank you for confirming that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, well, yes. We don't do that type of stuff. Okay, Coach Saban, and I have all the respect for you in the world. I've met him. I've been in his office, Paul. He's an incredible human being, an incredible leader. But like, and also something else around the word cheating that still rubs me the wrong way, whereas I call it fairly compensating. Like, the problem to me more so seems like Nick Saban is a little bit late to the party with what the payroll needs to be in order for his team to be at the highest level possible when it comes to being number one recruiting. And the reality is that he has to understand how to play this game differently. Now, I think he has the ability to adapt over time and change because he's a head coach, right? He's been able to pivot in the midst of games. I think he'll pivot now. But when you're talking about comparing it to the likes of Texas A&M with oil money, when you talk to the likes of Oklahoma or what's happening now at USC with Lincoln Riley, like, it doesn't need to come from your program. It needs to come from people around your program. Guys can get national deals. But guess what? Guys do want to get compensated. Lane Kiffin is picking people up in Rolls Royces, okay, on recruiting trips. So let's understand what the game is now. You may not like it, but this is where we are. And don't sound like a guy who's just complaining. I liked it back when. Like, let's adapt and pivot, Nick. Am I wrong here in saying that?
You're right. And everything, we can't add any more to the Nick Saban legacy. But he is 70 years old. Now, what does that mean? That means he has competed in an era when this was verboten. But it isn't anymore. Jay, well, cheating is going on at every level of college athletics. And the NCAA isn't doing anything about it because they're incapable of. So I think in many ways, that's really the problem for Nick Saban. You know, he may think he's doing it honestly, and maybe he is to a degree, But you're right. You know, he Bryce Young came all the way from California. He got $1 million NIL deal last year. And that's just the way this thing is going. And so ultimately, I think Saban has made an error here. He may be telling the truth in the purest sense, but college athletics is no longer sacrosanct. This is going on, and the Supreme Court essentially said it's okay in a very narrow ruling. So I think he's erred here. For Nick Saban, showing grievances is not a good look, and I don't think anything's going to come of it because Alabama will still be relevant. They'll probably win the national championship this year. It may push Saban closer to retirement. I don't know that. But calling out other SEC schools and mentioning, he also mentioned Miami in this, who is, as best as I know, is doing it by the book. It may be a sleazy book, but they're still doing it by the book.
And Paul, here's where I have a problem with it. I mean, and this one kind of strikes home for me because I'll just openly admit to everybody that I am close to him and I've seen him go through life and I've seen him commit himself to a HBCU. So when you bring Travis Hunter's name into it without bringing it into it, right, to a degree that he's committed, spurn Florida State to go to Jackson State with Deion Sanders, to me, like, I start getting mad about that because, you know, Deion has issues even busing players to games, right? There have been a lot of things about what they've utilized as relates to their bank and how they've had access to, different naming right deals, different TV deals, where he's had to change the culture to that degree. So like, when you start throwing Deion Sanders' name in there, who has a deal with Barstool, that actually, you know, he started attacking the game a different way. He started utilizing social media and content and building content around all of his players and the profiles of his players, of young black men, who a lot of people feel a certain way about the free labor that's been taken advantage of for so long. So when you start attacking that, a guy that's trying to get back to his community, then I start getting a little bit frustrated. Because I know he's venting, but like when you start going in that direction, I'm like, no, but like we need more of that in our schools and our communities. Don't knock that. Don't knock because you're not hustling the same way. Appreciate it. Praise it because he's giving back. That's just me personally. I get angry at it.
No, I agree completely with you. And I think, the stuff with Jimbo Fisher, that's intramural battles.
Yeah.
Those are things that go on within a league. But I think he really, what is going to go forward, Jimbo Fisher is going to speak in about an hour. So whatever he says is fine. But I'm really interested in what Deion has to say, because I think that is going to set the table for the next conversation. And Travis has already responded on Twitter, as I'm sure you know. And he says, you know, his situation at home is still the same. And I just don't like the fact that Nick Saban went after Deion and Travis without really any substantiation. I mean, he said, I read it in the paper. That's ridiculous in today's world for a head coach at the University of Alabama to attack another school and say, I read it in a newspaper. Nobody knows whether that's true or not. And frankly, Deion and Travis have denied it. So and I can assure you the NCAA has not looked into it either.
It'll be really interesting to see. I mean, like you said, Paul, obviously Alabama is still going to be very relevant this season, so I'm kind of confused as to why he even did this. But it'll be interesting to see how everything kind of plays out. Thanks so much, Paul, for your insight.